It's on.
It's on.
It's on.
It's on.
It's on. It's on. It's on. It's on. It's on.
Esto es Pisón, el podcast extraño y raro ficción. Conmigo su antifrón, el señor Frank Zangers. Yeah, es español time, mi amigos. That's right, a very different kind of episode for you this week on Bazong. A guy really, he's been on my radar, and I've been trying to gauge whether I can get him on the show or not because he resides over in the Catalan region of Spain. So I didn't know if he would be able to come on the show and communicate with us. But the more I looked into him, the more I learned that he is a very effective communicator in the English language. So I was more than happy to have on this week's guest, the one and only Mr. Hugo Camacho, who is the head editor of Orinthini Press in Spain. And he is a gentleman that's bringing Bizarro to the masses of the great country of Spain. So it was a really awesome opportunity to get to talk to him and get to learn what it takes to translate books from one language to another, in this case, English to Spanish, and the challenges of translation, especially with books of a Bizarro nature. I mean, some of the concepts there, you can imagine, you know, just straight translating ideas and phrases. You don't want to use Google Translate. So it's a bigger challenge to, like, I mean, how do you do something like Carlton Mellick's Quicksand House and those bizarre, strange ideas? It's an extra level of difficulty to do those translations. And as we'll learn, it seems that Hugo is doing a wonderful job. But before we can learn about all the wonderful work Hugo is doing on bringing Bizarro over to Spain, we have to talk about our sponsors here on the Project Entertainment Network. I, of course, am talking about Subculture Corsets and Clothing. You can find them on their website, subculturecorsets.com, or you can visit their store in the Jacksonville area at the Avenues Mall, just off of I-95. Of course, Subculture Corsets has the best in pinup, goth, alternative, steampunk, retro, Grease Monkey, men's clothing, shoes, accessories. They have it all. Unique, awesome clothing in sizes 4 through 4X. So nobody is excluded from shopping for awesome clothing at subculturecorsets.com. And if you shop at subculturecorsets.com and decide you want to buy something, I want you to use the discount code at checkout, Bizong, where you will receive 10% off your entire purchase. So if you are going to purchase something at Subculture, make sure you purchase everything you want at Subculture at the same time, because the more you will buy, the more you will save with Bizong and Subculture Corsets. That's subculturecorsets.com. So as I was telling you, Zongers, this week, I know I opened up my poor version of Spanish, but it is in English. So all you normal Bizong listeners won't have to worry about skipping over this one or anything. This interview is all in English. Hugo has a really good command of the English language, and I think the only hindrance to the interview was maybe a little weak connection at some points in the Skype connection. But outside of that, everything's nice and clear and wonderful, and it's a really interesting interview, I think. I was so engaged in learning about what it takes to bring a Bizarro book over to another country and into another language. Really, really educational for me, interview, and I hope you will find it interesting, educational, and engaging. So, Zongers, without a further ado, danos el gong. It is my pleasure this week to bring to you a writer, an editor, an amazing person. You know, it's a treat for me. This podcast, one of the greatest things is to be able to talk to not only great Bizarro writers in the United States, but from around the world. And very, very particularly, I'm excited to talk to this week's guest, the one and only Mr. Hugo Camacho from Spain. Hugo, welcome to Bizong.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be in the Zong podcast.
Thank you so much. Hugo, you came on my radar a few months ago now, where all of a sudden I'm seeing bizarro books getting translated into Spanish for sale in Spain. And Hugo, you are the gentleman that is responsible for bringing Bizarro, it looks like, over to Spain. Is this not true?
Yes, that's true.
And what? Okay, that's fine. What was it? How did you discover Bizarro and want to bring those books over to Spain?
One day I was just checking Twitter, and I came up with Tamara Romero's profile. We had been friends some time ago, and we've lost track, and suddenly I rediscovered her, and I was checking her website, and she was talking about Bizarro and how she went to a Bizarro con and got her book published in Eraserhead Press. And I started reading what she was talking about, and she was talking about those books by people like Carlton Mellick, Cameron Pierce, Jeff Burke, and I bought some of those books on Amazon, and I was like, this is amazing. Where have all these people been doing all my life? Because I, you know, a lot of people in the Bizarro community just say the same. You know that when they find out about Bizarro, it's like, okay, this is what I am. So where have all these people been all my life? And I started reading those books, and I was completely amazed.
Now, what was it that made you want to translate these books, from English into Spanish and bring it to Spain? It was that love that you were that you had for this Bizarro. You said, I have to bring this to the people of Spain.
Yeah, I have been unemployed for 2 years, and I didn't know what to do with my life. I was trying to freelance in some web design, but I didn't feel like it was something that I wanted to do. So when I finished reading two particularly books, Haunt by Laura Lee Barr and Carlton Mellick's Quicksand House, I asked to myself, this should be translated into Spanish. And I said, okay, I have a degree in English. I have translated before. Why don't I do it? And I said, okay, if I do it, I have to find a publisher to sell these translations for. But this is quite unusual here in Spain. So why don't I publish them? And that's where everything started. I turned myself into a publisher and ask for these books to be translated, and that's how it all started.
I mean I'm just completely blown away by the story. Obviously, I've seen Bizarro landing in the UK and in Scotland and Ireland and even Amsterdam to a degree, but I don't think they could translate in Amsterdam. I know there's a couple of books that get translated into German, but outside of that, this is the first time I'm seeing a real, Bizarro books getting translated into a different language. Do you have a background in translation of literature that you felt comfortable enough to take that process?
Yeah, I previously had translated some comic books, and also I made some technical translations, like brochures for chemical products and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I tried myself to see if I could translate them. And since I also write, and I was going to writing workshops, I found it very, very natural. It was easier actually, it was easier for me, and it felt more natural to translate literature than to translate other technical stuff. So I just said, okay, let's do it. And I sent, actually, when I asked if I could translate Haunt, John Skip from Fungasm Press said, okay, we don't know you. It's cool that you want to translate this, but we don't know you. We don't know who you are. You haven't started your small press yet. And I said, I can do a translation test, and I send you my translation, and you can check it with, if you have anybody that you know that can read Spanish, you can check the translation. And that's how I did. And he said he got a good report from my translation, and he said, okay. And I'm so grateful that John Skip and Laura Libar, who were the first people who said yes to me, did so. So I'm very happy.
That's, I commend you for going like right to the top, you know, going after John Skip. I mean, he's one of the premier publishers in Bizarro. So, I mean, like approaching him right away and going for one of the best books, a Wonderland Book of the Year award winner. That's awesome that you were like, we're going with the best here, and we're going to do this right away. You didn't try to work your way up. You like, the work is there. I have to ask you. I mean, I've taken several years of Spanish, and we could probably have a very simple conversation about I went to the beach and what's your dog's name. But I do know that translating sometimes, you know, English or any language into another, the phrasing can be weird sometimes. And I'm guessing with Bizarro, just because the material is so weird, was there a challenge trying to turn English, the phrasing of Bizarro in particular, into Spanish? Did you have any hurdles there?
It's always a challenge, but it's always different with every author. I have already translated Laura Libar, Carlton Mellick, and Jeremy Robert Johnson, and some others also for the Bienvenidos al Bizarro anthology. Yeah. Violet Dibuat, Garrett Cook, and some others. And since every writer is different, I think what it's most difficult is not just the phrasing of Bizarro, because I have read a lot of Bizarro, and I'm very comfortable reading and writing Bizarro. So what I feel that there's a big of a challenge for me is to try to translate the particular voice of the narrator into the book. That is what most concerns me.
Right.
So it's yeah, sometimes all the names maybe that a particular author that makes or if there is a particular creature that doesn't exist in real life, and you have to try to find a translation that sounds good. Mm-hmm. But it's actually reading a lot and learning about how people maybe talks in the street, so you get used to it. Watching a lot of TV series and movies in English, just to get a wide view of how English is used. And it's not that Bizarro is particularly difficult, but authors are difficult. Jeremy Robert Johnson was very hard to translate, but very funny.
Yeah.
And Laura also, she has this particular musicality in her phrases, and that's something that you have to bear in mind when you're translating.
Right. Yeah. It's an amazing challenge, I have to assume. Now, as far as reading go, obviously you picked up the English language version and read them and fell in love with them. How often do you find, or do you think that people in Spain, are they okay with, are they comfortable with, by and large, picking up English language books, or are they really, they just want to read Spanish books?
I think that they prefer reading Spanish books because most of the people maybe don't have a nice level enough to read a whole novel, mm-hmm. or they think that they don't have the level, but I think it's just a matter of fear, and I think that people, if you have a medium high level of English, you should go and buy a book and try to read it, and I'm sure that the first book is going to be hard, the second is going to be a less hard, but the third it would be more natural. Mm-hmm. But people prefer to read in Spanish.
Yeah, I imagine. So I my impression always is, and I've only ever been to Ireland and Italy. Obviously in Ireland they're pretty English all the way. But Italy, what I always found while traveling in Italy was, as long as I was in popular tourist areas, where American dollars were concerned, those people, at least spoken wise, they had a command of the English language. But I did notice, you know, walking by bookstores in Rome, there's no English translated books, or everything's in Italian. I imagine it's sort of the same way also in Spain. By and large, people are just seeking out Spanish language books. There's not really, I guess it's almost like a niche type of thing to want to read in English. But is people, by and large, I imagine in Spain are more educated in speaking English than, you know, the reverse of Americans learning a Spanish or a different language?
Yeah, I guess so. And the thing is that you read for fun, you know?
Right.
So sometimes if you read in another language, you feel like you're doing homework. Mm-hmm. and maybe that's why people mm-hmm. prefer to read in Spanish. Also, there's I live in Catalonia, and we also speak Catalan here. And the thing is that since Spanish has been the dominant language, mm-hmm. A lot of people use Catalan in their lives. Mm-hmm. They watch TV in Catalan, but when reading, they read in Spanish because reading in Catalan sometimes doesn't feel natural to them.
Wow.
And that's pretty weird. That's pretty weird. But a lot of people feel like they have to make the effort to read in Catalan. Me, for example, my education was mainly in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So I had to try and to train myself to read in Catalan and to speak Catalan when I left school, because I knew Catalan. I had wonderful degrees. I could take an exam and my writing was perfect, but I felt like my speaking was not as good, and I didn't feel like it didn't feel natural to me to read in Catalan. You know, it's a bit weird when you have a dominant language like Spanish, mm-hmm. and that takes over everything.
So it's I mean, how much of a departure is Catalan from Spanish? Are they drastically different, or is it sort of derived of the same sort of Romance language?
It's also a Romance language, so it's pretty similar. When we describe it as a mixture between French and Spanish. I guess that's how it sounds
okay.
to English speaking people.
Mm-hmm. And that makes
but
sense.
But it's not
the regionally speaking, that's about where you're situated too.
Sorry? It's regional.
I mean, the area Catalan is sort of, you know, it's leaning towards France, so it has that, I guess it has that blend. Because
it gets a lot of influence from, yeah. especially from Spanish, but it's not.
It's not necessarily French.
Blended that much.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
No.
Okay. But your Bizarro translations, they are strictly Spanish.
Yeah, because the market is bigger. And since Bizarro is a very small niche in Spain, which actually I created the Bizarro niche here in Spain, the audience is still a bit small. So I translate them mainly in Spanish because I need a bigger audience,
right,
for my books, you know.
Right.
But hopefully I will translate some into Catalan. There are also authors starting to write Bizarro, and they feel more comfortable writing Catalan, and they're doing it in Catalan, and it's a very special voice for Bizarro. Mm-hmm. it's really cool. I wish you could read it in the original language. Maybe I'll translate something. I'll try to get translated or translate myself or something into English so you can read. And I'm thinking about this, especially about one author, Sergi Uset, mm-hmm. which he's just started writing Bizarro, and he's so cool.
That would be amazing to do, because you're bringing over, you're exposing, you know, Bizarro that we have over here into a different language and making it accessible to people. As we just discussed, by and large, Spanish people just don't want to read anything outside of their native language. Obviously, it's the most comfortable thing. And like you said, if you're going to be reading for leisure, you don't want to tackle trying to wrestle with a different language in your head. So you're making it Bizarro so accessible. And I mean, that's what I love. And you're already, the process is already, like you said, sort of reciprocating, where you have writers now that are writing Bizarro over there, and you want to turn it from Catalan and Spanish into English. That's so cool. How long have you been doing this now, and what kind of reception are you getting?
I started my first two published books were released in January 2015, and the first Bizarro book was published in July 2015, and the response is, I think it's pretty good. It's pretty cool. A lot of people were a bit cautious about this Bizarro labeling and me claiming that this is a new genre, because, you know, everything has been done before.
Yeah.
But when they start reading Bizarro, they get this reaction: what the fuck am I reading? And that's it's like, well, that's what Bizarro is about. It wants to make you ask you this question.
Uh-huh.
So the response is pretty cool, and some of my friends have told me, okay, I'm buying you this Quicksand House book thing, mm-hmm. with the Bizarro label on the cover, and I'm buying it because you published it, and I'll give it a try, but I'm not pretty confident. And they called me the next day and said, I just read it in one night because I loved it, and this is amazing. How did you discover it? And that people started to get interested, and I think that Bizarro works as a virus or as a disease. When you get infected, you just can't live without it anymore, and it happens to readers, and it's also happening to some writers. So it's still hard, because I'm as I told you before, I'm working to open a niche for Bizarro. But when I look at the sales at the webpage, I see recurring sales from other people, that maybe somebody bought School Correct City, and the next month he's buying Quicksand House, and the next month he's buying the anthology. And I'm very happy that this is happening, because yeah. they are starting to be loyal fans.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And now, are your book sales all strictly digital ebook sales, or are you printing books also and trying to get them out that way?
I sell mainly print books. I started selling also ebooks, but piracy here in Spain is huge. Mm. So when I published Hunt for the first time, and I saw that the next day after the release was pirated, I got really depressed. And a lot of people read Hunt, but the sales in paper and in digital weren't that high as I expected for during the first year. And but it happened to be a very popular book, so I was very disappointed with it. And I think that there are readers who read digital and who read paper, at least in Spanish. I think they're two different kinds of consumers. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they blend in the same person, but they're usually they work in a different way. So I decided to work for the people who like to read in paper.
I love that, of course. How is it? Where are you getting the books out? Do you go to like places where you can sell books and set up your own little table, and or are you getting them into bookstores? How are you actually selling the books?
I started copying the small press system that I saw in the United States, started to do the same as maybe Eraserhead Press or other bizarro presses that they mainly sell on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And over the internet. And I started doing the same and selling and distributing myself to bookstores in Spain. I used to call the booksellers and try to sell my books to them. But in 2 years and a half, I think the press started to be a bigger than I expected, and I don't have time anymore to do this. So I went into traditional distribution. Mm-hmm. and also because people like buying stuff over the internet, but they always buy on Amazon and not on my webpage. Mm-hmm. or they want to go to a bookstore and find the books over there. And if you don't work for distribution with a distributor here in Spain, a lot of booksellers just don't call you and ask for one book. If you're not working with a distributor, they would tell the customer that they can't find the book.
Oh, okay.
So I decided to go into traditional distribution, and I started last September with it. And I think it's doing good. I don't have reports yet, but I think it's good, and that people can ask for the books in any bookstore in Spain that they want.
Mm-hmm. And now how about what you do to promote the books? Do you get out onto podcasts or radio shows, or I mean, what are you able to do there in Spain to make people aware these books are in the stores and available?
There are a few podcasts. There are a few literary podcasts here, because people who usually talk about books in media, they do it on YouTube, and they just review books. But there are a few podcasts that I've been interviewed to, but it's mainly creating your fan base over your own social media, your Facebook, your Twitter, and going doing a lot of presentations and readings. And if there is a fair trying to get there, if there is right after I'm going to BizarroCon this year, and right when I come back, there is CatCon, which is the first convention of Catalan science fiction. And so I asked to have a table over there so I can sell the books over there. And that's pretty much trying to go anywhere that you can. That you can sell your books.
Right. Yeah. I was going to ask you, do you have convention type situations over there as well? Because I know that's another avenue here that a lot of writers take is going to conventions. So how prominent are conventions over there? Are they hard to find, or are they pretty popular?
No, they're hard to find. We have this big Spanish convention, the ISPACON, which is it's about all science fiction, fantasy, and horror. Mm-hmm. And they it's held once a year in a different city. And this CatCon is going to be held for the first time this year. So we have these two conventions, and there are others, more ones, but they're not very popular.
Right. Well, I hope.
I think it's something that it's starting right now. Last year, they celebrated the EuroCon in Barcelona, mm-hmm. Which is the European convention, mm-hmm. and I think that this left a lot of people eager for other conventions. So I hope that in the next few years there are going to be more of that.
Yeah, that will be. That will be wonderful. It's been my experience with conventions. It's a really great way, you know, even if you're not selling books, but just to have the books out there in front of people, you know,
that's
a huge thing. And maybe you won't sell hundreds of books, but you'll have hundreds of people walk by and just be aware of it. So that's an awesome thing that you have. And hopefully we'll get more and more bigger for you just as another avenue to sell books. Now, how long typically does it take you to translate a book from English to Spanish?
It's usually 100 a month.
About a month? That's pretty impressive, actually. do you do something like to use a translation program and then go back and sort of fix it up? Or are you doing word-for-word translation?
No, it's word-for-word translation using Google Translate or something like that is awful. It doesn't work. It's not working.
Yeah.
So you have to do it word by word.
Wow, that's that's pretty good considering that it takes you know, you're almost rewriting the book essentially, and I guess in a lot of ways you have to. I hesitate to say use your own words, but you have to use your own phrasing. Try to make the English sound right in Spanish.
Sorry. No, the thing is that you have to make the Spanish reader have the same experience that the English reader is having with the original version of the book. Mm-hmm. That's what you have to try to do.
Right. So I mean, obviously you have a wonderful command of the English language, and I mean to translate something like Skullcrack City, like, you know, me reading in English, I really had to wrap my mind around it. So you really have to truly understand it and know how to do something. I mean, I got to imagine, like, with the monster in Skullcrack City, to make that understandable in Spanish is probably a pretty good challenge.
Yeah, sometimes I just wanted to kill myself. But I also have a very good editor, and he's been very, very helpful also. So when I get stuck in a phrase, I put it aside for a couple hours and then go back to it. And if I have problems translating it, I rely on my editor, and we both find the best answer. Mm-hmm. And I think that the final product is good enough.
That's all we can hope for. I guess by and large, the folks that you've translated don't really know enough Spanish to know whether you've done a wonderful job or not. Or do you have somebody who really knows Spanish and like, yeah, that was awesome?
The thing is that the best compliment that you can get is that people tell you that it doesn't feel like a translation.
Yeah.
And that's the response I've been having mainly. So I'm very happy about it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I can imagine. It's not like I read a book that somebody ran through Google Translate.
Yeah, but sometimes when the translation is not that good, mm-hmm. you see that how they translate it. It doesn't feel quite natural.
Like the idea is off.
Yeah, for example, in the English language, you use a lot of possessives, my hands.
Yeah.
Her. They saved my hands from frozen, for example. But you wouldn't use all this big amount of possessives. So right. when you're reading something and the translator uses this possessives, it's like you didn't word the phrase enough. It sounds correct in Spanish because it's correct, but it's not natural.
Not how you would say it, right? Not ever how you would say it.
And you have to try to avoid this kind of things.
Mm-hmm. I understand enough about Spanish to know where you're coming from with that. So that is the truth. Yeah, that's when, like I said, like especially with Bizarro, since things are just weird to begin with. So. I mean, I write myself, so sometimes trying to describe something weird is difficult for me in English. And just to get the image or the thought in your head onto paper in English that you know is difficult. So I imagine like trying to transform that idea into something that's understandable in Spanish. And like you said, like seamless, like it just sounds natural. It's got to be a monumental task at times.
You have to make it yours. You have to make this particular voice, you have to make it yours. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do it is starting working on it. And maybe you started and you translated 20 pages till you find the voice, and then you have to throw it away and start all over again with that new voice that you interiorized, and this is the way to make it like it was something of your own.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like in a way you have to do rewriting. You're almost. At times, writing the book yourself, you just have to take the idea and make it work in Spanish.
Yeah, and respecting the phrasing, and respecting the sentences mainly. A lot of translators consider that they're authoring the book also. Well, it's considered an authorship, and you have your rights over a translation. If another publisher, for example, in 10 years wants to publish School Correct City, they can ask me for my translation, and I can sell them my translation. And if I don't want them to use my translation, they just can't. It would be a copyright infringement. So they have to translate it all over again.
Right. I totally appreciate that. Is that how you present the books? Like you co-wrote the books, or do you just call yourself an editor with the translations?
No, because I'm the publisher, I'm the designer of the inside of the book, I'm the translator. I do almost everything in Orsini Press, I don't like to put my name on the cover of the book, but if I had a book translated by somebody else, I would definitely put his name on the cover of the book. Mm-hmm. A bit smaller than the original author, but he deserves to be on the cover of the book because it's an authorship.
Yeah.
But I don't put my name on the cover of the book because I don't want my press to be identified only with me.
Right.
You know, because I do all the presentations, I do a lot of interviews, but I don't want people to identify the books with me because my work is, I work for the talent of other people. You know, it's not, I'm not working for myself.
Right. I that's completely commendable. Now, how many books have you translated so far? Is like 4 or 5 books so far that you have available in Spanish?
Yeah, I have 4 Bizarro books translated in Spanish. I also translated Nick and Tosca's Midnight Picnic and another book by Edward Page Mitchell, who is a science fiction writer that used to write in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And those are the books I translated and published with Orsini Press. And I also published some other books by Spanish and Catalan authors.
So your Orsini Press is not specifically a Bizarro press. I guess it kind of be speculative fiction. So you're not completely focused on Bizarro. Bizarro is just one aspect of what Orsini Press is doing, correct?
Correct. Bizarro, I have a collection of Bizarro, but because I wanted to publish people from here, but if they didn't know Bizarro, they couldn't start it. They couldn't write Bizarro, you know? Mm-hmm. So I decided to open it a little bit and publish some other science fiction, horror, and fantasy stuff. But the thing is that some of my authors are starting to write Bizarro now, so they're jumping from one collection to another.
So I think that's probably, you said, you know, the ultimate compliment is saying that, you know, it didn't seem like a translation to me. It sounds like really the ultimate compliment is that you're bringing Bizarro there, and now you have people starting to write Bizarro based off of you exposing them to Bizarro. Like, look at, you have to see what this is. And they love it so much that they want to write it too. That's a huge compliment to Bizarro. And it tells me too, you know, I guess I just naturally think of it, just Bizarro as just an American sort of thing. It might be cultural. You might even think like people in other countries, just like those crazy Americans, what the hell are they doing? But when you bring it there, when you translate it and it's true to that, and you see it just popping up in other countries, you know that it's beyond a cultural thing. Like Bizarro is a universal thing, and no matter where you bring it to the world, there's always going to be somebody going, where has this been all my life? This is the weirdness I needed in my life. And it doesn't matter where in the world we live. There's just, people need to connect with the weirdness.
Absolutely. There are weirdos all over the world, and we have been alone all our lives, but Bizarro is bringing us together.
Yeah. That's just a wonderful thing. And just that you're translating it and it's making sense to everybody, and that they're turning around and going, yeah, this is what I need. That's it. That's the thing. It's not a cultural thing. It's a universal thing. Now, have you ever encountered something in Spanish or Catalan that is Bizarro? Like nobody recognized it. It's that weird book that somehow somebody took a chance on and published, but you read it and you go, oh my goodness, this is Bizarro too. Just nobody's labeled it that yet.
Yeah. Actually, I think that there is a particular author, Valle Inclán, who he's dead. He wrote in the 19th century, but he, the way that he talked about reality and the things that he wrote, they're completely bizarro. Mm-hmm. But it's obviously it's not labeled that way because he died more than 100 years ago.
Right.
But the feel, the weirdness is there. And I would say that he made a huge influence on Bizarro, but it's impossible because I don't think that his work has been translated.
Mm-hmm.
When Spanish people read Bizarro, they make this connection. You know, because Bizarro I think that it's always been there, but it got labeled 20 years ago or so. So I think that, yeah, there are many things that can be considered Bizarro, and some movies also that can be considered Bizarro. Some Alejandro Jodorowsky, can be considered a bit of Bizarro, and some Alex de la Iglesia, and I don't know if you know a movie called The Day of the Beast.
I've heard of The Day of the Beast, yes.
Yeah, because I think it has been all around the world. And this guy also made a movie before The Day of the Beast called Mutant Action, which is it's a post-apocalyptic science fiction movie about some mutants that they're so ugly and they turn themselves into a terrorist group and they want to kill the beautiful people. And there's a lot of things. It's just, I think it's just the same that over there in the USA, when if you take, for example, Videodrome by Cronenberg, mm-hmm. you say, well, this can be considered Bizarro, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are some things here. And also one of my authors, he's infected with the Bizarro virus and and his particular vision of Bizarro is very funny because he's mixing, it's like a mixture between Bizarro and Almodóvar. Uh-huh. And it's so funny. It's so funny. Yeah, I have to translate something of some of his writings someday, so you can read it and see how other people use the Bizarro and put their particularities on it and make it grow. It's really funny.
I would love to read. I'd be so curious about a translation into English, but reading, you know, the Spanish version of what Bizarro is, what comes out of Spain, that would be so interesting to me. I mean, is that sort of a plan down the line to maybe like an anthology of Spanish Bizarro translated back into English?
I don't know if I can talk about it because I have to find a partner first, but one of the things that I want to do in BizarroCon is trying to find somebody, some other publisher that wants to do a mixed anthology between American authors, maybe six American authors and six Spanish authors, and make them write some Bizarro. And translate the Spanish into English and translate the English into Spanish.
Oh, wow.
So it gets published both in Spain and in the US. That would be so fun.
Oh, qué so bonita. Much fun. Qué bonita. I love that. I love that idea. You keep bringing it up. You're going to be at BizarroCon just 2 weeks away, if it's even 2 weeks. Is this your first trip to the United States?
No, I have previously been in the United States like 4 or 5 times, but it will be my first time in Portland and obviously my first time at BizarroCon.
That's wonderful. I wanted so badly to be at BizarroCon this year, and I couldn't make it happen. I am on the East Coast of the United States, so it's a big trip for me and everything, and it's time-wise, I've used a lot of time in the summertime, so I couldn't make it happen this year. It would have been a pleasure to shake your hand, Hugo, because
yeah.
I am in awe of what you're doing. I've talked to people in Scotland, in the UK, in Ireland. There was even a gentleman in Norway, but he was still from Scotland, so he was still English speaking. And it's a pleasure and an honor to see you really making Bizarro accessible to a brand new language. Like I said, I've seen, and it's probably more horror than Bizarro, the German translator, but you're the first person I see actually translating straight Bizarro into a different language. And it's such an amazing thing. And to hear you saying that you're now like getting the reciprocal of Spanish writers now wanting to write Bizarro in Spanish, that's just perfect. I mean, I love the genre, and to hear that it is expanding in that way is truly amazing.
Yeah, I'm very happy about it. And there are also other publishers that are getting interested in Bizarro, and other people that are not in my orbit. I have my authors and my friends, but suddenly some other people are starting to try to write Bizarro because they just find out and I don't know them. And this is so cool. This is so cool because we need to make the world more Bizarro.
We totally do. And I mean, at this point, you've been so successful at doing it. I mean, to make it work, that's a challenge unto itself. And you're obviously making it work. Do you have everybody knocking at your door now? Is all the Bizarro press is going me next? Do you have a lot of books that you're like now translating or going to be translating, or is that like Bizarro Con you're going to load up on contracts and stuff to bring more Bizarro over there?
I have more books in queue that I can translate or that I can publish. I have already a list of books for next year. And I'm starting to, I don't want to read any more manuscripts or any more translations, but I have to give a response to two of them because I don't want to start worrying about 2019 yet because 2017 hasn't ended. And, but yeah, I have a lot of work for next year. I will be translating Garrett Cook's A God of Hungry Wolves.
Wow. Yeah.
And I will also be translating Long Form Religious Porn by Laura Libar.
Oh, beautiful.
And Nick Antosca's The Obese.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some other things that I would like to work on that I can't talk about yet.
Right.
But it's, I don't know if I'll have enough time to publish them during 2018 because I also have to publish some other Spanish books. So, I think I'm going to BizarroCon and there's a few people that I want to talk to. And I don't know, let's see what happens.
That's wonderful. I mean, not to get into specifics of business, but I have to imagine people are pretty easy to work with to get contracts, to get the rights to translate and everything. That's been a relatively easy process for you.
Yeah, it was hard at the beginning because, you know, I started from scratch and nobody knew me. But obviously, getting the confidence from others to do this kind of stuff when they don't know you, it's a bit hard. So I guess that you have to put your work in front of you and show it to the others, and that's how it all started with John's Cape, as I told you before. It was not easy at the beginning, but you know, I think that you can talk about everything with people, and you can ask people. you don't have to be afraid to ask people. And if they say no, it's okay. It's no big deal. Again, there are more writers that you can work with. I think it's just ask people and try to offer what you have and try to be honest.
That's all we can ask. At this point, I mean, if it were me, you know, I would be like, yeah, please take make them all into Spanish. I mean, it's such an exciting prospect for me to, like, you know, to think to have somebody who's proven themselves capable of handling the translation. To me, it would seem everybody should be, like, lined up just begging you at this point to make it happen.
Yeah, I don't know what will happen in this Aragon. I have some writers that send me their books to see if, mm-hmm. if I could translate them. But hopefully my press can grow a bit, and someday I can pay other translators to translate other works, because there's a lot of translation from English. There are a lot of translators, mm-hmm. and there are very good translators here in Spain.
Mm-hmm. So that's the idea. Is obviously the more money comes in, the more it's going to be. You'll be able to get more people on board to translate more books.
Exactly. But I don't want to get more people on board if I can pay them.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a matter of time, maybe a more couple years to make it big enough so I can pay a translator. But I'm working on it. I'm working my ass on it. So it's my day job. I'm 24/7 committed to Orsini Press. So maybe in a couple of years I can do that.
That would be awesome. You go from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate all the work you're doing, even if I'm not one of your consumers. but for you to be spreading Bizarro, and that's why I do this podcast, to try and help spread the word of Bizarro. And you're doing it in by taking that extra step. You're translating into another language altogether. So my heart is warmed by the work you're doing, and dedicated work. And obviously you're doing the right work, hard work, and it's paying off. Obviously you said this is not going to happen overnight. It's a longer process. It's taken you 2 years to get this far. But I mean, 2 years, I'm seeing over here in the United States that what you're doing is undoubtedly working, and it's very exciting work. So I really want to thank you for doing wonderful work and spreading Bizarro.
Thank you very much for your words. This is the total payoff. thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. And this is something that I found in the Bizarro community, that everybody is so welcoming. Just like you, and you want to go in the community, and they open the door for you and say thank you for being there, and I'm very thankful. I'm very thankful that you're having me in your podcast, and I'm really happy that I can go to BizarroCon this year.
It's going to be wonderful. I hope you have a wonderful trip out there. I'm sorry I can't shake your hand in person. Maybe one day we can make that happen.
I hope so.
That would be great. But I wish you the best on your trip and the best for Othini Press. I'm going to be keeping an eye on what you're doing. And I don't know how many of your readers in Spain will listen to this podcast. So, but if we do get some people from Spain listening, please, by all means, check out Bizarro. It's too easy to pick it up from Othini Press out there in Spain, all of Spain, Catalan and Spain, everywhere, all of Spain, get it. Maybe even Puerto Rico too, right? It's Spanish though.
Yeah, they can buy the books over at Amazon USA, and people from Argentina and Mexico are buying it from Amazon USA.
Beautiful.
So Yeah, and I'm working with a distributor for Latin America, so maybe not this year, but during 2018, I hope that some distributors in Latin America buy from him and they can start spreading the books over there too.
That would be so exciting. Hugo, a year from now, I am definitely going to check back in with you and see how far we've come from this podcast tonight.
Cool. I'll be here.
All right. Awesome. Hugo Camacho, spreading Bizarro around the world. Hugo, thank you once again for being on Bizong this week.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hugo Camacho es el mejor songwriter. No, see, there it is, the Bizong interview of Hugo Camacho. I mean, I know a lot of my, and probably most of my Bizarro Bizong listeners are English-speaking folks, so you're not going to go run right out and seek out the Spanish-language version of what Hugo's putting out there Bizarro-wise, but it's really cool. I mean, I like to spotlight people who are doing that. No, not just the writers, but the people who are helping spread Bizarro everywhere. And I mean everywhere. As you could tell, Hugo, not only Spain, where he's located, but now he's looking into expanding into all Spanish-speaking markets in South America, Latin America. I get chills just talking about it, Zongers. Right now, I get chills. Either that or it's November and it's a little chilly. But no, seriously, it gives me chills talking about the fine work that Hugo is doing for Bizarro. So, thank you once again to Hugo for joining us on Bizong. I hope I can do that for somebody in Germany, for somebody in Russia, for somebody in Japan. Those would be really, really cool things to hear happening translation-wise for Bizarro. Onwards and forwards, Zongers. We always move forwards here on Bizong. Don't forget, please, Project Entertainment Network hosts a Patreon page. I know they're a dime a dozen nowadays, but seriously, this is not just for Bizong. It is not just for Mr. Frank. It is the Project Entertainment Network's Patreon campaign. So for as little as a dollar, you get value-added content network-wide. So if you're a fan of Bizong, fan of The Horror Show with Brian Keene, Three Guys with Beards, It Cooks, onwards and onwards, everybody is contributing something in some way, shape, or form to Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page. So for as little as a dollar a month, you get all that value-added content, such as Mr. Frank's Bizong Bizarro Spotlight Book of the Month, where I do a video book spotlight of just cool Bizarro books I got laying around the place. And I think you should check out. It's for people not totally familiar necessarily with Bizarro, or people who are into Bizarro and want some cool recommendations. There's lots of Bizarro books out there. So I'm giving you some ideas of what you may be able to check out right there in Patreon's campaign page. But also, I just conducted an interview with one of the new podcasts on the network, the Unsupervised Podcast. So I did a little like mini episode I called Not Bizong, with a cool little mini Not Bizong intro. So if you want to kick in a dollar, you can check that stuff out over on Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page. So Zongers, I appreciate you as always checking out Bizong, one of the top five shows on the Project Entertainment Network, typically, not consistently, typically. That's right, Zongers. Thank you so much. I mean, it's our little Bizong show. The curator of the network is always blown away when the Bizarro show is making top five numbers with the big boys, as it were. So thank you so much for listening and making us big, letting the world know we are not just some schlub little group with five people listening. That's really, really awesome. And now that we're done listening to Bizarro, you're free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
Project Entertainment Network presents Buttercup of Doom with your host, Kelly Owen. Just a girl who writes horror and thriller fiction. talks to bugs, jumps in puddles, and now hosts a weekly podcast full of opinions, advice, and a touch of gypsy wisdom. Whether it's current affairs or social media nightmares, join me as I rant and rave and offer up a big old bucket of common sense. Wednesdays on Buttercup of Doom.
Three Guys with Beards. The Project Entertainment Network store, featuring t-shirts, mugs, stickers, hoodies, and more from your favorite Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
Inkstains, Scribbler's Rest.
The Horror Show with Brian Keane. Why not show your loyalty by wearing a cool product from the podcast group and show off to your friends?
It Cooks.
Armcast.
The Mondo Method Monster Attack.
Necrocasticle. Go to projectentertainmentnetwork.com and click on the store tab for more details.
The Liars Club Podcast. Bizarre.
The Lunch Ladies Book Club.
Matters of Faith.
The Project Entertainment Network Store. Stacked with stuff from the best podcasts on the internet.
The Curtain Jerkers.
Buttercup of Doom.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.